This show is produced and hosted by Mark Weber. The show is sponsored by G3 Apparel. The views expressed in the following program are those of the sponsor and not necessarily the opinion of 710 WOR or iHeartMedia. Who is Mark Weber? He's a self-made business executive here to help you find your success. From the New York City projects to the Avenue Montaigne in Paris, his global success story in the luxury world of fashion is inspirational. He's gone from clerk to CEO twice. Mark is classic proof that the American dream is alive and well. Here's your host of Always in Fashion, Mark Weber.
Living in America, what an impressive place. The world's an impressive place. The wonders, nature, even people. I've spent an inordinate amount of time thinking over the last few years. I love to just do nothing but think about what's going on in the world, what's interesting, what do I enjoy, and of course, what I want to talk about. I also spend a lot of time walking. I walk everywhere. This past year, I walked 1,168 miles. Pretty amazing. During these excursions, however, I sometimes listen to the radio and oftentimes podcasts. I admit, I don't suffer fools well, but there is some amazing work done out there. And I'll tell you, there are things that are impressive. One thing in particular that impressed me, actually it's more of a someone, is this guy Joe Rogan, the announcer for the UFC, the mixed martial arts announcer, to be precise. That's how I knew him. I didn't pay much attention to him until I was in Las Vegas with my family, and my sons, my boys, forced me to go to his stand-up act in one of the hotels. I didn't know he was a comedian. He explains his comfort with a microphone. But I was surprised, to say the least. I found him extremely clever, and I particularly was impressed with the extent of his view of the world. Anyway, I forgot about him. So many other choices, so many things to think about, until one day again, my sons grabbed me and said, "You gotta listen to Joe Rogan's podcast." And I did. And I found out this guy, Joe Rogan, was super intelligent, well-read, excellent interviewer, and he caught my attention. I have to admit it. My first interview, I listened to him talk to Elon Musk, who I think is a fascinating guy. He's one of my favorite people in the world, Elon Musk. And he did a great job with him. Actually, he just wound it up, asked him a few questions, and Elon Musk just kept going. But the other day, while I'm walking in my neighborhood, I turned in again to Joe Rogan's podcast to listen to talk. And this time, he was with a former Navy SEAL, a guy named Jocko Willick, who turns out, in turn, he does his own podcast. And I expected to hear about the exploits of Navy SEALs, but that's not really what the extent of the subject matter was. In fact, of course, there was the conversation of COVID. And there was a heavy dose of patriotism. There was intellectual back and forth. And then they entered my world. The conversation switched to the patriotic idea of made in America, particularly apparel made in America. And this Navy SEAL talked about the fact that pretty much all of hunting gear and hunters, who are most patriotic all Americans, want their clothes made in America. And I listened to this. And I listened to them say that all apparel should be made in America. Textile mills used to exist in New England, reopen them. Weaving mills and knitting mills in Georgia and the Carolinas, reopen them. And of course, get sewing down south again. We should make all our apparel in America. Now, Joe Rogan may be an expert on practicing good health and mixed martial arts. He may be an expert on comedy. I'll even give him an expertise in interviewing people. And this fellow Jocko is an expert in the military and the Navy SEALs. And I should say thank you. Thank you for your service. These are two smart, well-read guys, experts in the field. But if we want to start talking about bringing back all apparel to be made in America, that conversation, I know I'm an expert. That caught my attention. Now, I'll say that they made it sound so simplistic. Everything should be made in America. With all due respect to these fine gentlemen, their dialogue was sophomoric. Unrealistic. Didn't present the facts or the reality of how we got there. And it's funny. Anybody who watched me or listened to me walking and listening to their conversation would have thought I was absolutely nuts. I was either talking to myself, I was howling at the moon, I was screaming out loud, "Are you freaking kidding me?" It drove me crazy. Why can't everything be made in America? Why do we allow our factories to close and give up the jobs? These factory towns have become ghost yards. Now, guys, your hearts are in the right place. It's just your information is off. And I agree with you. It's sad and incredibly hard and difficult to tell your loyal associates you're closing the factory that they work for, sometimes their entire life. I've done it. I've been to office, I've been to factories, and I've closed them. At the same time, it's difficult to tell toll collectors they're no longer needed. It's difficult to tell bank tellers we don't need you anymore. It's difficult to explain to airport ticket agents that people can use machines to check in. The world changes. Technology finds new ways for us humans to get things done. But it wasn't technology that decimated the USA manufacturing and textile industry. It was the government of America. It was the management of the companies in America. And really, the truth was, you can't blame anyone, because it just doesn't make sense to make apparel in America any longer. It's a low-wage industry. There's very little inflation in apparel. I pretty much tell you, you could buy $9.99 t-shirts 50 years ago and you're still buying them for $9.99. Prices don't go up. Now, I suppose if Americans were willing to pay twice the price for everything they buy in apparel, or 10 times the price in many cases, this would be fine. 10 times the price for their underwear, the suits, their dresses, their shoes, sure. So, this got me thinking. And while their heads were in the right place, their knowledge base was not. Which in turn, that walk was fateful to me because it got me tonight's show, Made in America. If there's one thing I've developed in my life that I'm expert in, I was one of this country's foremost experts on importing, strategic sourcing, and procurement. During my tenure in this capacity, I traveled overseas multiple trips a year, no less than 2 to 3 weeks at a time, sometimes 5 weeks. I miss family events. I spent religious holidays overseas. My birthday sometimes. I've missed anniversaries. This was what was required if you're going to import apparel and textiles into the United States. So if you're thinking it was for pleasure, it wasn't. It was for business. I tell you this so that you understand you're listening to one of America's foremost experts on the reasons for the decision to importing and the loss of Made in America, particularly for apparel and textiles. I often say, I don't know whether I'm smart, others can decide that, but I do know I'm well-trained. And I know that once in my life I was brilliant. And that one time was on the subject of Made in America, or more accurately, the fashion industry's role in dismantling of American apparel manufacturing. We were not alone. Every retailer, every manufacturer, every one of them shifted production from Made in America to other ports of call around the world. The government knew we were doing it. Every business manager had an obligation to provide profits for their companies. They did it. Everything was done with their eyes wide open, and it was done in the most fairest way it could be. But I admit, I am guilty as charged. I played a major role in dismantling products made in America. But before you judge me, I have the story to tell. Now hold that thought for a moment. Unless you were displaced by your factory closing, losing your life's work, it's terrible on every level. Your fellow citizens haven't noticed, do they care? Those of us who are implementing the growth and importing saw it. It was disheartening for the families affected. We knew they were losing their jobs, but new jobs were being increased elsewhere. But in reality, we did what we had to do. We had to do what had to be done. Hold that thought. Ask any American. I'm sure there are exceptions, as Jacko pointed out, that hunters and their specialized clothing is made in America. Some luxury denim is made in California. There are still knitting mills making underwear in the South. But pick a number, 90 to 99% of apparel and footwear made outside the United States. Once again, as backdrop for all of this, hold that thought. When did this become a hot topic again? When COVID hit, we got a lesson in Made in America. We were astounded, outraged to hear that all of our antibiotics are imported from China and some other Asian nations. How could that be? We're not producing our life savings drugs? Someone could take over this country by just not giving us the drugs we need. That has to change. Computer chips are not made in America. How could that be? The recent shortage in automobiles and cell phones and other technological marvels are reliant on chips made in China and Taiwan. How could we be without our current and future technology not made in the United States? Our whole infrastructure is in jeopardy. We're not controlling our own future. How can that be? And we learned this during COVID, and we were all shocked. How could it be? We can thank our government, our politicians. They lost sight of the primary goal, protecting our country. I didn't look into it. However, I did look into the following. The government mandates that all military uniforms are made in the USA. That's smart. Then I started thinking about our military hardware. When you look closely, I found out the F-34 fighter jets, our most important, newest fighter jet, are relying on China for certain parts. Oh, really? The Jones Act of 1920 protects and oversees constitutional regulation of the production and qualification of U.S. ship manufacturing. It's smart and protects us. The Navy or Coast Guard vessels must be built in the USA. The superstructure must be built and assembled in the USA. However, when you look closely, a number of components do not have to be. That's tricky and scary, don't you think? Look, COVID has no good intentions. But in this regard, bringing our vulnerability as a nation to light is the only byproduct I could see of this consequence. Getting our nation aware and prepared and proud will also leave its mark. Now, point is, America is complex. It's just the price. It's common sense. To be intellectually precise, Made in America is about price, quality, and innovation. And it makes sense when you think about it. Now, in anticipation of this show, I started asking friends, certain colleagues, did they prefer Made in America? Most said they don't even think about it. Those that said all things being equal, they would prefer to be Made in America. And then when I asked them, would you be paying more for it? Absolutely not. What do you think you have that's Made in America, I would ask, and they couldn't give me any specifics. So that kind of says it. Now, one thing I know for sure that was Made in America, my son, my lawyer, co-host Jesse Weber.
You had to be weird about it, huh? I love this topic. When we talked about that you were going to talk about Made in America, I actually loved this because I heard the same exact podcast as you. In fact, I was listening to that conversation between Joe and Jocko, and I thought of you, and I don't remember if I even told you about it. You might have just listened to it on your own. But as I was listening to it, I thought you would disagree with what they were saying so strongly.
Speaking about disagreeing, before you go on, you weren't on the show last week. You were busy.
Yeah, I was on vacation. What do you want from me?
Yeah, I want to congratulate you on the souvenir you brought home for vacation. You and your girlfriend got COVID. That's how you spent your away time instead of being on the show, getting COVID?
It's not like I went to the gift shop and bought it. This is not something that I wanted.
Yo, you went to the I'm not going to be as careful as I should be shop.
Let me tell you something. Okay, first of all, I'm okay. I'm fine. I just have a really bad cough. If I had to take a guess, I have the Omicron variant. My girlfriend has no symptoms whatsoever, but she still has to isolate. She still has to isolate and quarantine for 5-10 days. That's the rule nonetheless. And I'm not downplaying COVID-19, but when I said to you, you know, I think, first of all, it's spreading like wildfire. I was wearing a KN95 mask everywhere I went.
Except in the house with me, thank you.
Let me tell you something. I didn't go to parties. I didn't go to bars. I was eating outside, specifically eating outside in the cold so that I could come back and see you. I wasn't taking crazy risks. I will tell you, you know where I think I caught it? One of the things my girlfriend and I did is we went to the Bronx Zoo, and there was a tour guide, and she was coughing nonstop through a Lion King mask. And I said to her, she goes, no, don't worry. I got tested. I'm negative. It's just allergies. I don't think she was accurate because let me tell you something. We both took tests, me and my girlfriend. We took a rapid test. We were negative. We were positive on the PCR tests. So if you ever want to go into a conversation about how inaccurate and inept testing is, that's a good example of it. I have a feeling I caught it from her.
Well, anyway, you and your girlfriend are okay, and you're back. So you were saying, let's go back to Made in America. You listened to that show, and what would you take away other than you thought I'd love to comment, and here we are doing it?
Look, I think they had the right intentions. Their idea was we want to take stuff away from labor atrocities that happen in China. Their conversation was about cell phones made in China and how the workers are objectified, they're committing suicide. I agree with them. There are problems. The problem with what they're saying is, and you said it best, the best word you used to say it was unrealistic. The way they were trying to say how everything should be brought back into America, one, two, three, it didn't make sense. And for me, it's not a hit on them, like they don't know what they're talking about, but they don't know what they're talking about.
Exactly. And that's why I was screaming at the phone.
Right. So that's what I took away from it.
I have a question for you. Is your girlfriend at home with you now? Because you're both isolation.
She is. Why?
Put her on the phone.
Really?
Yeah, I want to ask her a question.
All right, hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Hi.
Hey, Haley. So the other day, I asked you, would you like your clothes to be made in America? And you said to me?
Yes, I do.
And why is that?
Well, personally, just from experience, I think the quality of the products are better. I mean, for example, I'm a collector of vintage t-shirts, and I have some t-shirts from the 70s and 80s that are over 40 years old that are all made in America.
But it's important to you, made in America? So when you go shopping, when you're looking at the labels, you only buy made in America?
I don't only buy made in America, but when I do see a label that's made in America, I am more forced to buy it.
Other than vintage clothes, what do you have that's made in America?
I think some sweatshirts, some sweatpants.
Maybe.
Like Reformation is made in America.
100%?
I believe so. Buck Mason is made in America. That's one of Jesse's favorite brands.
It's true. I do love that brand.
Would you pay more for made in America, Haley?
Would I pay more? It depends how much more. I mean, if I'm looking for a longevity of a product, I would consider paying more rather than buying something from China where I know eventually it's just going to fall apart.
Everything from China falls apart?
Not everything, but a lot of the fast fashion pieces do.
Daddy, she sounds like Trump. She's like, China's not paying their fair share for terrible products. Terrible products.
Well, I found the one human being in the United States who's looking for buying in America other than hunters. All right, thanks, Haley. Get better, okay?
Thank you.
Haley just bowed to you as she left the conversation.
Uh-huh. With all due respect, all right. You buy stuff made in America, Jesse?
That brand Buck Mason, I do.
You buy it because it's made in America?
No, I could care less.
If you ask me, I have no idea if I have anything in my wardrobe that's made in America. Now, that doesn't mean to say there aren't things that aren't great made in America. You have a list of what was made in America.
You know what's made in America? Weber Grills. How about that? You know what's made in Easton, Pennsylvania? Crayola Crayons.
Ah, very good. What else?
Oh, this is a great one. Stetson Hats. The cowboy hats.
Uh-huh.
New Balance Shoes.
Some.
Zippo lighters.
Mm-hmm.
Burt's Bees personal care products. You see them in like every store.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is an interesting one. Benjamin Moore paint. Oric vacuums. Oh, you know what's made in America? Post-it notes. Oh, you should know this one. L.L. Bean. Lodgeware cookware. Herman Miller furniture. Hickey Freeman.
All right. Tonight, I want to talk about made in America, okay? There are things that make sense to make in America. You know, we make an awful lot of automobiles in America. They're generally made down south. They're made in non-union factories. I've always been torn on unions because my father belonged to the Topographical Union. He was a printer with the New York Daily News, and the union was good to him, good to our family, and I don't know where we would have been without the union. But as a business executive, I've had mixed emotions on the union because you're talking to the union instead of your employees because technically they're employed by us, but really they work for the union. But as it relates to apparel, the apparel industry vacated the United States a long time ago. And there are things that are left here. There are jeans in California. There are some bathing suits. There are items here and there. Hickey Friedman suits are made in Rochester. But by and large, there's a reason that made in America for apparel, retail, and luxury disappeared. We come back, we'll talk about it.
Always in fashion.
You ever think about do your thing, being individualistic, thinking about what you represent? I spend my whole life fitting in yet being different, coming up with my own style. Today, DKNY's entire fall collection is surrounding this idea of doing your own thing. Do your thing. How do you make it yours? This company, that brand, has always been about self-expression, about perspectives that matter to you. We're all different. We come from all different places. We have different points of view. And we all look at things differently. We can all see that same item and treat it in our wardrobes entirely uniquely for our own style. That's what makes DKNY special. 24/7, DKNY believes in designing for real life because they've always been about revolutionary pieces in the Donna Karan arsenal. DKNY has always championed, think less about what you're doing. Be individualistic. Do something personal. Take your style to where you want to take it. Don't follow trends. Fashion comes and goes, but style is forever and style is yours. DKNY is going to be introducing the 24/7 capsule wardrobe. It'll be based on smart silhouettes and a signature handbag collection as well. All designed with just the right amount of trend-forward details to fill in any gaps within your wardrobe. This reborn collection is about individualistic people. They're going to feature in their advertising some of the most creative people from art, culture, society, dance, in the country, in the city that never sleeps, the city that is so unique, like the people in it. DKNY Fall Collection is Do Your Thing. See it, buy it, embrace it, and make your statement. I'm so excited to watch fall evolve with DKNY. DKNY, do your thing. Make it yours.
Welcome back to Always in Fashion. Here's your host, Mark Weber. Don't want to be an American idiot.
I would be an American idiot if I stood up here as a senior level executive for the amount of time I spent if I didn't move my production out of America. I had no choice. The world was competing. And the truth be known, Made in America apparel doesn't exist anymore. There are exceptions. There are certain key pockets where certain products can be made. But generally speaking, America can't produce apparel. And the reason is we are the greatest country in the world. We have the highest standard of living in the world. We have one of the highest minimum wage requirements in the world. And certainly our benefits, Social Security, Medicare, all these things, health care, that are part of the payroll and expense of a company, pushes our cost for operating up higher than anywhere else in Asia and in most parts of the world. We are a great country. And American products, particularly in apparel and footwear, are inflation-proof. Prices don't go up very often. And American people expect very low cost on their apparel. When you have high-priced designer apparel, any party goes. If you make a tuxedo with Ralph Lauren, nobody cares what it costs. They'll pay the price. But that's the exception to the rule. I began my career at a company that had 10 factories. Our headquarters were in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. And I remember going, and I remember joining, and I remember learning about mass production. And all our factories were set up to be the most efficient they could be with the overhead and people that we had. And therein lies the rub. In terms of the world, we are expensive for manufacturing apparel, when in turn, it was one of the lowest wage jobs in the country. Wouldn't it be great if we could switch out those laborers to higher paying jobs? Anyway, we made a lot of our products. I was at a shirt company. We made a lot of products in the United States. And I remember imports started coming on. And it started coming on first in retailers. Retailers decided that they needed products that they could control with their own labels on them. But what we found out is that we weren't competitive any longer. So let's take a white shirt. If Macy's, I'm picking on them, I don't mean to, I respect them. If Macy's went to Asia and bought a white shirt direct, they'd probably pay about $5 at the time for a white shirt and sell it for $20 and had huge margins. If we made those shirts in the United States, we would have cost us $10 to make them. They would have had to be $25, not $20, that Macy's direct private label, and then we had to justify it. And our margins weren't all that great because we were squeezed. There were certain products, I should point out, maybe a men's Oxford shirt that was heavier in weight and more gruff and durable than most other products. It wasn't fine yarns. Oxford shirts were expensive to make in Asia, comparatively speaking. If we would make a regular dress shirt, white dress shirt, we would probably buy it for half the price, if not even less expensive. An Oxford shirt, we would only pay 20 or 25% more. So you just couldn't compete. While this was going on, we were going through all kinds of studies on how much production we need to make to feel safe. Pretty much came down to, in the end, we don't need to make in the United States. But we didn't do that right away. We moved all our production from the Northeast down to the South. We headquartered in Ozark, Alabama. Our engineers were the best engineers you can find. They understood every facet of manufacturing, every facet of warehouse and distribution. In the end, they weren't competitive. Our factories never voted in free elections to have a union because they were concerned that although they respected the union, they were concerned that union wage factories end up being closed and they didn't want it. So they worked very hard to stay competitive, but they didn't. Retail started importing, middlemen started being entrepreneurs and importing products on behalf of different people and got in the middle of us going direct. And it was the disparity that created this problem. Everything was less expensive. And because of the cost and because of what we were seeing going around us, we had no choice but to send expedition teams out to Asia. I wasn't the first of my company to go, but I was fascinated by textiles. Because when you think about shirts, it was all about either solid color or the patterns. And I started to get involved. And in a relatively short time after being involved, I was confronted with huge manufacturing runs in textile manufacturers. Huge quantities had to be bought to get prices to where we needed them to be, which interfered with our ability to be creative. I noticed that these imports that were coming in had sharper packages, finer fabrics, looked more sophisticated, more European than our American products. It just looked better, cooler, more fashionable. I started to go in and look. My first trip to Asia was to determine whether or not I could buy fabrics in Asia and import them for our factories in the United States, and it was a rude awakening. Those things that I were paying $1.47 a yard for in the United States, I could purchase for $1 a yard. Now, if you take 47 cents and multiply it by 25 yards, which is what it costs to make a dozen shirts, that in itself alone was $12.50. $12.50 difference, which meant at retail, add in your margin, it was $25 difference. It was crazy. And in the end, I can tell you, after 5 years of negotiating with the Japanese, when our dollar was strong, I eventually got the price down to 52 cents a yard. You want to call me an expert? I was. I became famous here and in Asia, particularly in Japan, for what I was able to do and negotiate on behalf of our company. The manufacturing costs were so incredibly different. When you look at the lives and wages in Asia, our people were making $100 a week, $200 a week, way back when the competitive people working for factories and shirt factories in Asia could be making $10 or $20 a month, maybe $100 a month if they were in the best factories. There's no competition. We couldn't compete. And it's interesting to note that even in Asia, when a factory begins, very often third world countries begin their manufacturing and their industrialization with making apparel. The reason be, it's relatively easy to teach people to sew. It's relatively inexpensive to set up a sewing factory.
By the way, let me just interrupt real quick. I feel like sewing is the toughest thing. I had to do that in middle school. I took a sewing class for like home economics. I still can't figure it out. How is it the easiest thing to teach?
Well, it's a lot easier than building an automobile. It's just an easy thing. When you learn how and how to hold your hands and how to run the fabric through it, it's easy to teach. That's why third world nations do it. And it's a great opening industry to give people jobs because there are a lot of people in a factory. But over time, any factory worth its weight starts to wonder whether or not they'd be better off manufacturing cell phones than apparel because the stakes are so much higher. As far as employees go, the working conditions, air conditioning, cleaner factories, because cell phones per se can't afford dust in the air. And to get trained workers, they're willing to pay more. So most workers who are really efficient in Asia start to wonder whether or not they should be working in garment facilities or in other industries. But that's what happens, and that was supposed to happen in our country. Find other industries to work with. I'll never forget my first trip to Asia. I went to Korea. You want to talk about slick and professional? There used to be a company, I don't know if it's still there, called Daewoo. It was called the Chosun, which was the name for these big conglomerates in Korea. Daewoo made heavy machinery to personal automobiles, toothbrushes to airline tires. It was amazing working in that showroom. We would negotiate production to make shirts in their factories in Busan. My first trip to Busan, I walked into a factory making shirts. I tell you, it was like two city blocks. It was the hugest thing I ever saw in my life. And it was set up with sewing lines, each group of people making 2,500 dozen shirts per month. And there were 20 rows of these shirt factories doing that. I've been to Taiwan many times, to Kaohsiung, which is the free trade zone in Taiwan for manufacturing of apparel. Any materials brought in, whether it's fabrics, buttons, labels, tags, would come in duty-free and leave duty-free when they were made. A tremendous advantage for importing items needed for manufacturing in that zone. And they, too, had factories the size of automobile factories manufacturing. And they all knew what they were doing. They all were trained. It was unbelievable. These were incredible facilities. And how do you compete with it? You can't. Their prices were extraordinary. And as wages started to rise from these conglomerates, they realized that wages in offshore countries were less expensive. So they would buy and open up factories in Manila, in Malaysia, and they would build and build and build. And we couldn't compete. So we had a choice: close our doors or manufacture overseas. And we did, and I did, and I traveled everywhere around the world. Now, the U.S. government wanted to protect American industry, and they still do. And the U.S. government had two mechanisms in which to protect American manufacturing. There was a limit put on every country. They were given a quota on how much they could manufacture of a particular category and ship them into the United States. The United States granted this quota to various different countries based on trade and based on political situations. If we wanted a relationship with India, we would give them more quota. If the people in Bangladesh were suffering and we felt for those people, we might give them more quota. And of course, military issues were always behind them. And then there's the subject of duty. Do you know what duty is, Jesse, while we're talking?
Yeah, that's taxes, taxation, right?
That's exactly what it is. And that was done evenly around the world through the World Trade Organization, which I'll talk about. Duty is a tax on anything you import. The duty on men's cotton dress shirts was 21%. So therefore, if you bought something to import and it cost $20, you would pay a tax of 21% on that, which would be another $4.20. So if you had a shirt that you brought in $20 and you'd sell it in retail for $40, now you have that same shirt. Because of the duty, it would be $50 at retail.
But it's still cheaper than manufacturing in the U.S.
25 to 50% cheaper. But that's what I said. The government was trying to protect us. And by putting a limit and a quota in each country on how much you can import, those two things were designed to help American industry. And Jesse just hit the nail on the head. Didn't work, because the prices overseas compensated for any pitfall, any road bump, anything we put in place to protect industry. Now, I have to be intellectually honest. There was the American Apparel Group and the American Textile Group, and they worked when they could together, but the textiles was interested in protecting themselves, and the apparel people wanted to protect themselves. And it became apparent, certainly when I'm buying fabric for 50 cents a yard less than the other places, anywhere I went, and buying fabric that when the United States was $1.25 a yard and I'm paying 52 cents, textiles had to be said. And in order for us to survive as manufacturers, the textile lobby and the apparel lobby couldn't agree. So the apparel lobby, us, went to Washington and said, look, we can't get these fabrics in the United States. If we can't import these fabrics, which are more sophisticated, finer yarns, quantities that we can actually manage and not be forced to buy quantities we can't use and force us to create surplus and problems, we won't be able to keep the factories open. And all of a sudden, the government started allowing us to import textiles at will. And anytime we could explain a hardship, and anytime we could explain that our factories would be in jeopardy, they allowed us to import those fabrics. Now, it wasn't that simple, but that was the thought. And we ourselves as manufacturers hurt the textile industry. And they hurt themselves as well. They weren't nimble. They weren't quick. They couldn't change. They were mass-produced, and they were as efficient as they can, making the one thing they wanted to make. But nobody wanted one thing. We wanted multiple things. And that ended the relationship between the American Apparel Manufacturers Association and the American Textile Manufacturing Association. And then there was the World Trade Organization. When I come back, I'll talk to you about that.
Always in fashion.
This is Mark Weber, host of Always in Fashion Radio and Podcast. I like talking about my favorite brands. And one of the three most important American heritage brands has always been Nautica. I've always been a big fan, a big admirer, and I wear their products because the quality is great and the styling is perfect. I love their colors. I love everything they do. Frankly, so do all Americans. That's why it's become an institution. Right now, they have a great new shirt that I want to talk about. It's hard to find a shirt that exists for multiple uses, but Nautica makes the perfect shirt that you can wear at home, you can wear to the office, it exists. And more importantly, you can even wear it on the weekends to live that style you're going out with, having fun in. That shirt is the Nautica 4-Way Stretch Shirts, which are made for modern lifestyles that go with you anywhere, do what you want to do, whenever you want to do it. These Nautica shirts are made with 4-way stretch, moisture wicking, temperature control, and wrinkle-resistant technology, and they will travel with you anywhere, and you'll always look amazing. From working in the office, at your home, or your social weekend life, you can find these shirts, Nautica's 4-way stretch shirts, at Macy's, Nordstrom Rack, and Nautica stores online. Guys, I don't recommend many products. This one I do. I am a believer. Nautica, dress shirts, and sports shirts. 4-way stretch. You got it here.
Welcome back to Always in Fashion. Here's your host, Mark Weber.
Nothing would please me more than making all of our products made in America. Hey, we have no choice. We want to survive. We woke up from COVID when we found out that all our antibiotics were being made in China and other ports of calls in Asia. That's crazy. Anything we do militarily that isn't manufactured in the United States has to be crazy. But the reality is, I'm an apparel retail and luxury executive, and apparel cannot be made here. Not the kind of apparel American buys where price is so important, where so much of our business is done in main floor department stores, in discounters, in national chains. America is about price. We don't like inflation. If you're buying Louis Vuitton or you're buying Chanel or Dior, you can pay anything. But when you're talking about everyday clothes, your Dockers pants, your Van Heusen dress shirts, your DKNY sportswear, price matters. And I admit, I was one of the guys that dismantled the American textile and apparel industry for imports. I can't apologize. I'm sorry. I had hoped, and there were so many other jobs created, but this is life. In order to compete, the world changed, and this was an industry we as Americans really couldn't compete. Now, there are some places that they make suits. There are places that we make underwear and certain knitwear items, and great. But by and large, these industries moved offshore. In 1948, there was an agreement. It was called GATT, General Agreement of Tariffs and Trades, where the world got together, put together a membership list of people, and these people agreed to do business technically together. In 1994, GATT was eliminated in favor of a new treaty agreement, which was called the World Trade Organization. Let me play something for you, explaining what the World Trade Organization is.
The World Trade Organization, WTO, is an intergovernmental organization that regulates and facilitates international trade between nations. Governments use the organization to establish, revise, and enforce the rules that govern international trade. It officially commenced operations on January 1, 1995, pursuant to the 1994 Marrakesh Agreement, thus replacing the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade that had been established in 1948. The WTO is the world's largest international economic organization, with 164 member states representing over 98% of global trade and global GDP.
So there was a governing body put in place to help us coordinate all our efforts importing from each other around the world, and it worked. And you had to be a member. Now, for some reason early on, maybe because China was a communist country, maybe because we found too many unfair practices for a whole lot of reasons, including fear. China was not a member of the WTO and therefore didn't have the advantages. Their quotas, restrictions were through the roof. They could not import at will. Their amount of quota they were given was not most favored nation status, which was the term given to people who were part of the WTO, until 2001, when the WTO members agreed to allow China to become a member. Now, just for example, if you were a sweater manufacturer and you wanted to manufacture in China, the limit for cotton sweaters was minuscule in China. Pick the smallest country in the world had far more quota than China. Hong Kong, who was a trading partner early on from Hong Kong, early on had a tremendous amount of quota. The problem was the lifestyle and the expenses in Hong Kong. The standard of living in Hong Kong was 10, 20 times higher than China. So China could make sweaters for $2 a piece. Hong Kong, it would be $10 a piece. And during that era, when China didn't have the quota, they were being cut out and shut out from the WTO, a lot of shenanigans were going on. I, not myself, but I knew of them. It was called submarining. Certain manufacturers make these $2 sweaters in China, send them into the Hong Kong. Hong Kong would sew the labels on in their factory and then present them as made in Hong Kong. And the cost was $2 plus 50 cents sewing in the label versus $10, which it would have cost to make in Hong Kong. They subverted the system and got around the quota system. But in 2001, China was let in to the World Trade Organization. All their quota was eliminated. Now, you have a billion people in China. You have a billion people in an agrarian society. You had to keep people working. You had to give people the opportunity to work. You had these people who were living out in the farms all over the country, spread out. Now factories were being built that could make our products that Americans wanted without any restriction on the number of quantity. And this went through the roof. Every one of us couldn't wait to get to China. Every one of us went in there with our eyes wide open and couldn't believe the prices we were paying. I think the first price we paid for a dozen of men's white dress shirts was $36. To make that same dozen dress shirts elsewhere in Asia would be $136. It was a gold rush. We went in there, we brought them know-how, we gave them technology, we teach them how to make our products so we can benefit by buying them at low cost. We sent our own engineers, our own technicians to teach them the quality. We told them what raw materials to make, where to buy all their findings, the buttons, labels, threads. We even told them where to buy the boxes until they figured out how to make them themselves. And China, from 2001 to today, became the quickest growing industrial economy in the history of the world. They put billion people to work. My first factory trip to China to watch them make our shirts, I worked through a factory in Beijing. It was called Beijing Number One. In the early days of business in China, you didn't work with entrepreneurs. You went to the government, to the head office in Beijing. We would go in, meet with government officials, have dinner, shake hands, drink, talk to them about our business, how much we're excited to be with China. They would ask us what we're bringing in terms of technology. We explained how we were teaching and how the quality is growing and how they'll be able to manufacture these products and ship them now, not just to the United States, but all over the world. And they loved us for our engineering. They didn't care about the money. They cared about putting their people to work. After the garments were fully manufactured in any manufacturing facility, they were pressed, put in bags, put in cartons, and shipped. I'm in the factory. The shirts are finished, and I'm waiting to see where the bags are. I want to look at the garments. I want to look at our package. Nope. All the shirts were going to another area that I had never seen before. And there was a line of about 100 Chinese workers. Each one of them had a little silver bowl with a bar of soap and a toothbrush. And I looked at my chief engineer from Hong Kong and my compatriot from our company. I said, "What's going on here?" And he started to laugh. He says, "Walk with me." The shirts were on a conveyor belt circling around these 100 individuals who would take out their toothbrushes, put them in the water and the soap, examine the shirts, and brush out any slight imperfection that might have existed from a white shirt traveling around a factory, from the fabric being cut, to the parts being made, to the parts being assembled, to pressing. There would always be something. In the United States, there are extra threads. There's a little bit of soot here and there, but it comes out. Here, they were cleaning it up to perfection. And I realized two things at that time. One, that the China quality can be as good or better than anyone's in the world because they had these people working. And I also realized the Chinese and the Chinese government would do anything and spend anything to give Chinese people jobs. And that's something we couldn't compete with. It was remarkable. And all I can tell you is the WTO opening their doors, eliminating quotas to China, changed the world. Any hope of manufacturing anywhere else around the world other than Asia and particularly China was gone. And we all did it with our eyes wide open. Take a break. Be back in a minute.
Always in fashion.
It's Mark Weber, host of Always in Fashion. Karl Lagerfeld was one of the world's most celebrated fashion icons. His creative genius still is through with his Karl Lagerfeld Paris collection. Karl Lagerfeld was known for his artistry, his photography, and his fashion design. He was a brilliant, brilliant creator. And he was also known for his cutting-edge and aspirational and inspirational approach to style and life. Included in the Karl Lagerfeld Paris collection is women's ready-to-wear, accessories, shoes, and bags. Karl Lagerfeld also offers a wide range of watches, eyewear, and premium fragrances. The Karl Lagerfeld brand is there for you to be different, to be special, and feel unique. Explore the Karl Lagerfeld collection at karllagerfeld.com.
Welcome back to Always in Fashion. Here's your host, Mark Weber.
Tonight's show is made in America, and I'm trying to explain the reasons why we're not making apparel, footwear, luxury goods here in America. It's interesting to note that when you look at luxury goods made in Italy, there are 100,000 Chinese workers making in Italy. So is it made in Italy or made in Italy by Chinese workers?
Wait a second. I have to interrupt you there. Why don't they just hire low-income Italian workers?
They don't have to do the same thing. And nobody wants those jobs.
I never thought of the Chinese immigration to Italy before.
Well, the truth is, though, when you look at luxury goods, the price of making handbags in France, when Vuitton makes a leather or vinyl with leather trim handbag in Italy or in Paris and they charge $4,000 for it, doesn't matter what the label costs are. Because the cost of those products, the retail selling price is so high, they can make any price they want, and they can afford to pay the labor. Not so in most of the things. Look, I wanted to talk about Made in America tonight. I realized that I rushed through it. I could have made this a three-hour show, but I don't have the time. I want to say, though, the following, because it's important to call it out. The world changes. Technology automates. Millions of jobs are lost. But millions of new related jobs are created. Made in America is a powerful statement. But like most things in life, things need to make sense. We cannot compete in apparel manufacturing in the United States of America. Americans are not willing to pay double, triple, 10 times the price they're paying now. But that's okay. We can compete with other industries in America. Automobiles, hard goods. There are other things that we're expert at, and we can do it. On the common sense point of view, we learned in COVID that we're not protected, that our medicines, particularly antibiotics, are made outside the United States. We must tighten controls and bring all military manufacturing home. We must develop higher paying technology jobs. We can't outsource all our computers, all of our cell phones, all of our chips. That's our future. That's our infrastructure. We must immediately bring all critical medicine manufacturing back to our shores. Look what Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson have achieved in manufacturing here for COVID. Our military uniforms, thank God, are manufactured in the United States. This makes strategic sense. However, if the world closed tomorrow, we'd all be walking around naked and shoeless. There just might be a strategic decision that has to be had at the highest levels between Washington and our largest apparel and footwear companies? Do we need to build a strategic reserve on clothing like we have on oil? Should we have tops, pants, and shoes, coats, warehoused around the country to clothe every man, woman, and child in America? I'd vote for that. I wouldn't vote for those items to be manufactured here, but with government money, take some of the billions and trillions we waste elsewhere and create security. That would open factories. But that aside, apparel will not be made here. Business learned and knows that low-paying manual jobs are best done in third-world countries. People here aren't willing to pay the price for those industries that are not technologically advanced manufacturing here. We've moved on, and that ship has sailed. We're planning with vision. Perhaps we can ensure that Made in America is a complex issue. Automobiles have found a way to find a home and portion of the total mix that are made here. They're well-paid jobs for American workers. A $1,000 cell phone should be able to be made here. Luxury items could be made here. We should be encouraging our friends in Italy and our friends in France and our friends throughout Europe. Made in America has the same cachet as made in Italy or made in France. The USA is the strongest economy in the world, and we should be leveraging it. Trump tried to muscle our allies and trading partners to buy more of those things and more of those products that we make here. He was right to try and get the trade balance evened out. He was right. He was on the right track. Europe, Asia, you want access to our markets? You want the size and protection of the United States around the world? Then you buy our products. Here's an idea. To the present administration and all those administrations that follow, add a constitutional amendment. We will do no business with any country that doesn't eliminate the trade imbalance. And that's an idea that's made in America. Good night.